convince your wife to drive you.
No. Among other things, that would be terribly bad for, my marriage. But also, it's like it's just long enough each way that if I want to do that, I mean, I could take the bus. It's actually not that longer on the bus, or I could take a car each way. It ends up being cheaper just to sleep there than to commute, though.
Yeah, that I can understand.
You're listening to Dots, Lines, and Destinations, a travel podcast with host Stephen Seagraves, Fosma Moon, and Seth Miller.
Hello and welcome to episode 210 of Dots, Lines, and Destinations. This is Seth hosting this week and doing a piss poor job of it so far. And we got Foz on the line. How you doing, buddy?
I'm great, and yourself?
Well, in so much as this is clearly not the first time I tried to start the episode, not so great, but such is life. Can I
At
blame
least,
jet lag?
details. At least it's in the beginning and not halfway through when it's harder to restart.
Yeah, and as our frequent listeners know, editing isn't one of our strong suits, so. Usually the bad stuff just stays in, but this time you don't have to hear my idiocy too much. It's been, I don't want to say a slow week, but it's been an interesting week in the news. It seemed like not a ton happened. I guess part of that's because of Labor Day and people trying not to be stupid and make news. But at the same time, that only covers the US and there was plenty of the rest of the world going on. So I don't know. But we got some new tickets on sale. That's exciting. Norwegian has finally launched sale of its Argentina flights.
Yeah.
And this is, I mean, you shared this note. So this is the domestic Argentina service.
Yes, it is.
So yeah, Norwegian Airlines, like over a year ago, applied for route authorities on a bunch of random, not random, but connecting a bunch of different cities in within Argentina, and they're going to send some of their 737s down there to make that happen. Sort of constantly looking for new markets to serve, and they got the approval, they got the stuff going, and now they're actually selling tickets. Do we have a date for an inaugural?
I'm sure we do. I, of course, did not
Okay.
write that down, but I can see what that is. So,
Yeah.
I guess the qu question with this is, what do we think is Aerolíneas' future?
I think it's about as sketchy as it was when we started talking about these getting approved back in the day, which is, it's clearly not a good thing to have competition like this when you're operationally less than spectacular.
No.
And there's some places where like flag carrier gets a lot of leeway, even if they're awful. I'm not sure Argentina is one of them, right? We've talked about this with Air India. People, locals don't particularly love Air India in many cases.
Right.
And
I mean,
so
our
I have to,
former.
I wonder if Argentina is the same way. Do locals hate it? We need our former producer on to give us some insight.
Well, I was about to say, from talking to our former producer, the locals do not like our Aerolíneas at all.
Aerolíneas?
Yeah,
Yeah.
because they never know if they're going to go or not. That's their biggest complaint. So the dates: Cordoba and Mendoza start on October 16th.
Oh, soon.
Yeah, Iguazu starts on November 12th. Neuquén, November 19th. Bariloche, I'm sure I'm going to butcher these, December 12th, and Salta, January 7th.
Okay. You think my wife would appreciate if I told her I needed to skip her birthday and be in Argentina for a random inaugural?
I'm thinking no.
Yeah, bummer. And I probably can't convince her. I said maybe I could convince her to take a quick Argentine vacation and just happen to need to be in one of those cities and get between them accidentally on the inaugural flight.
Is she listening to your record?
No, but she's also not that stupid. She'd know something's up.
Just making sure she's not in the
Nah. Anyways, yeah, so it will be interesting to see how that goes. The other interesting thing with Norwegian is it briefly has it has recently been running London to Singapore. And apparently, that's now likely to shift to São Paulo. I've seen that they're going to kill that route come January and shift this capacity back across to South America instead of keeping on fighting Singapore Airlines and British Airways to Singapore.
They're flying Singapore?
Yeah, from London.
I had no idea. For Gatwick, Singapore.
That goes to show you just how well the route's doing, huh?
Yeah, I had no idea. Okay
Yeah,
then.
Norwegians had the Singapore route
Wow.
out.
Wait, they're actually giving up on a route? That's not like them.
I don't know that that's necessarily true. I think they give up. I think they aren't quite as willing, quite as quick to give up as a Delta Dartboard, but they definitely have given up on routes pretty quickly. They started the route in September of 2017. So they gave it a year. It'll be a year and a half, it looks like, by the time it dies. But.
I mean, I guess part of the problem there, if you ask me, is Singapore economy, regular economy, is a premium product, right? And so if you're...
It is one of the more comfortable economy products flying. Their 777, this is dated, so you know, you'll have to forgive me. I did their 777 JFK Frankfurt a few years back, mm-hmm. and wasn't especially impressed by it. I just didn't find it. The legroom wasn't anything special. The crew was very nice. The meal was fine, but I just didn't. I didn't find it lovely.
But it's often just the interaction with the crew that changes one's perception of an airline, right? Like, you talk to people who fly Emirates, and they love Emirates, and even in coach, and it's not like there's a lot of extra room. It's just the experience and the interaction you have that most people talk about.
And this is
something the Western carriers haven't really figured out, is that you could have a borderline product, but if you make the experience more memorable and have better interaction, that leaves a positive impact on the end person.
Hey, listen, man, that crew is there for your safety. They are not being paid to smile.
Clearly, at least not in Europe or the US.
It's funny you mentioned that. The conference I was at last week in London, Robin Hayes, the CEO of JetBlue, spoke on one of the conversations, and he was talking once again about maybe we'll go to Europe with our A321LRs when they finally come get delivered. And putting aside the fact that JetBlue has been screwing around on officially making this decision for way too long, and it's like it's like comedic at this point that it's not happened. One of the comments he made, and this is something I've experienced as well, is talking about the Mint service. And one of the reasons Mint succeeds is because of the crew, and they really actually are nice. I mean, their coach, you know, travel experience, whatever, the crews are generally pretty nice too, but for the premium product, that is a huge part of their sort of what they sell. And I will say it's rare that I remember flight attendants walking off of plane when I leave a flight, and I remember the names of my flight attendants from my Mint flights.
You know, I've yet to try Mint. It's on my list, and I just haven't had a chance to. But the question that I would bring up is, now the time to compete on transatlantic.
And so that's a very good question. And certainly I see where you're coming from on that. What they're looking at is not being a traditional low-cost carrier operation across the Atlantic. They're not looking to compete with Primera and fill 200 seats of mediocre economy.
That's okay.
They want to compete. They want to compete in premium. They want to compete for those 16 seats up front, and then also sell coach that happens to be a little better. And I think if they tweak it a little bit, depending on the planes and a few other things, they could almost get to the point where they're sort of like how Iceland Air was selling its premium economy. I mean, that was a blocked middle seat. I don't think JetBlue will go that far, but mm-hmm. it commanded a small premium fare-wise, and JetBlue could try to command a small premium fare-wise for the transatlantic economy while underselling business class a little bit and still profit significantly relative to other carriers. And another interesting comment Robin made during his interview was that he was really happy about the massive volume of competition in the coach cabin, because the low-cost carriers were providing downward fare pressure in the back of the cabin, which was forcing the legacy carriers to increase fares in the forward cabin, which means they don't have to cheat. They don't have to undercut as much to sort of, you know, even if they say we're just going to charge 50% of whatever the going rate is, it's 50% of a bigger number, so they can have a higher profit margin. It was an interesting take on the situation.
Well, so I've been looking at transatlantic fares the last week, right? So there's a lot of pressure, like based on Delta's announcement 2 weeks ago, they're dumping a lot of capacity into transatlantic. So there's a lot more competition. There's also some really aggressive fares transatlantic in the premium cabin. Like, you can find $2,000 to $3,000 fares fairly consistently. Somewhere in
from what cities?
Like right now, Newark, Berlin, $2,200.
Okay. How about Boston?
I don't know. I haven't really looked at Boston.
And that's where JetBlue is going to launch its service from. I was sort of being mean and asking that question because one, I know I have researched a lot lately, having made this my new home airport. Boston still has Saturday night stay requirements on all the legacy carriers for coach fares. Right. My trip last week where I flew Primera and Norwegian was about $600 or $700 round trip on low cost carriers, or $2,800 in economy for a Monday to Saturday trip.
Oh, don't
get BA or Virgin. So on the nonstops.
Don't get me wrong. So it's funny, you know, in the last 3 years, when Norwegian first started flying transatlantic, all of the legacy carriers went in like gangbusters, cut their fare rules, cut the one-way fares you could get cheap. And in the last 18 months, 24 months, they ratcheted those back to what I would call traditional rules, pretty much out of everywhere. What's interesting is if you start in Europe, it is not the same. So they are much more lenient. So as an example, I was looking at, flying from Heathrow, London, not Heathrow in particular, but London in general, back to the States. And I was able to get a flight without a Saturday night stay for nights for like $500 on American.
Yeah. No, I still have an open ticket. I've been a European originating passenger for 3.5 years now on a lot of my trips.
Yeah, trust me, I know that feeling. But it's interesting. So the U.S. carriers are no longer matching the pricing out on the U.S. side, but they are matching it on the Europe side.
Jeebus. $207 nonstop on Norwegian from Gatwick to Singapore.
Oh my God.
One way.
It's almost tempting enough to do.
I'm now starting to think I should go back to London.
What's the premium economy fare?
I gotta switch cabins on this. This is nuts. Why the hell? I mean, 700-ish?
Even that?
Yeah. I mean, for Norwegians, what they call premium, so it's premium or business or whatever. So it looks like 724 is the lowest it gets. The service is stopping on January 9th, and it's currently 4 days a week.
So a week too soon for our trip.
Unless
we went the other way.
Yeah, what if I'm on the last flight out of Singapore? It gets back on like the 10th.
You'll still a week ahead because it's the 17th this year.
Is it really?
Yeah. Thursday is 17th.
Oh, well, it's a good thing you told me that. I probably would have gone to London to Europe the wrong week. Martin Luther King Day is the 21st. It's late.
It's the third weekend of the month. The third Monday of the month. Yeah,
so it's the latest it can be. It's the 21st.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank goodness you told me. I really thought it was the week prior to that. The 11th is the last flight out of Singapore.
Now, are they still doing those with 789s, or have they been subbing other aircraft in?
It's loaded as a 787. I don't know if that one was getting swapped or not for some of their substitute aircraft. I think the substitutes were mostly doing North America.
Okay.
But I will say, I flying home on Norwegian yesterday, landed 3 minutes early, 787. It was perfect. I mean, perfect is a relative term. Everything went exactly as expected. Biggest trick I've learned with them, bring your own food, because the stuff they sell on board is disgusting.
I think that's probably status quo for all of the low-cost carriers.
Low-cost carriers. Yeah. I was actually, we talked about my Premier experience last week, and I forgot to mention, I said a standard low-cost carrier pay for everything is my kind of mantra there.
Yeah.
I was unpacking my bag, and I forgot. There's actually one thing you don't have to pay for. They had kids' coloring books that they gave away on board. An activity book with I'm not sure if they're colored pencils or not. I haven't opened it yet, but there was like an activity book and a little pack of pencils or crayons and a sharpener, which is actually interesting. It's a small blade. That they gave out. I was in premium on that flight, and so I'm sitting there, and the flight attendant had it's actually a really nice set of colored pencils. Had these little packs that, as they closed the door, the flight attendant walked through the cabin with a stack of like 10 or 12 of these things and gave them to all the kids. And I looked over, like, can I see one of those? I'm just curious what it is. She's like, yeah, and she actually gave it to me because, I'm a nice guy, and I can sometimes convince other people of that, whether true or not. But yeah, they have kids' activity packs on board. They give them away, sort of like other European airlines do, but it's, even on a low-cost carrier, sometimes there's something good that comes out of it.
Cool.
Yeah. So I don't know why that matters, but it's sitting on my desk here staring at me, so I figured I'd share. Anyway, Norwegian's shifting around. Speaking of Primera also, last week we talked about them adding Berlin as a hub. They're also now adding Frankfurt as a hub, or base, not hub. I got mad at Steven last week for that.
They're adding as a base.
They're going to do their same.
Yeah, and they're adding four routes, Montreal, Toronto, Boston, and I think they said JFK, not Newark on that one.
Yeah, but they said JFK, but then they showed Newark on the map or vice versa.
Oh.
It's all New York, who cares? Except one of them's not actually in New York, and people get pissy about that sometimes.
But. So, you remind me, speaking of how, people consider the airports the same and they're not. When I was playing with flights last week, I was looking at flights to Philly from London. And one of the routings that came up was Gatwick to JFK on BA.
Yeah.
Ground transfer, Newburgh to Philadelphia on AA.
Yes. That's amazing.
With three and a half hours. And I'm like,
oh, that's not
think,
amazing.
I'm like, I don't think you could do that in 3.5 hours.
It would be tight. That's if you're doing award searches on the AA website and you use the NYC code, they include both Newburgh and White Plains by default.
White Plains is okay, a little closer. But yeah, I'm like looking at this, I'm like, SWF? I'm like, wait, how do you get to Newburgh? And then I'm looking, I'm like, oh no, you land at JFK and then you have to get to Newburgh.
Yeah, that's bad.
Could you imagine booking that and not knowing that?
Yeah, that's bad. I mean, that's a very expensive taxi ride.
Yes.
I wonder what that taxi ride would cost. Because that would be, it's a fixed rate on a yellow cab if you got one. But
is it?
My recollection is destinations beyond the five boroughs or Nassau County that are also not Newark Airport. Maybe it's only town car services that use fixed rates. There's like a book of what the mileage and the rate is supposed to be. And it's up to the driver if they want to accept the ride or not.
Okay.
But it's certainly up to the driver if they want to accept the ride or not, if it's past Nassau County or Newark. Mm-hmm. But I don't remember if it's fixed rate or negotiated rate.
Yeah. I mean, the timing of it was awful because it's like you land in the mid to late afternoon, then you have to get from there to Newburgh. I'm like, I really don't think you could do that in 3.5 hours.
Yeah. It's like you land at like 4:30 or 5, right?
Yeah.
6 maybe. I mean, maybe it's a little later than that. That I was in the terminal when that flight was leaving Gatwick yesterday. So I saw it on the boards. It was fun. Anyway, so Primera, adding all these transatlantic routes. I mean, clearly, this is one of those things, like, if you wanted, you know, you could say JetBlue is being stupid. Like, if they wanted to launch transatlantic, they should have just done it already. But, you know, with all this competition, is there a market? And I think, as, you know, Robin Hayes said, the main thing they've got going for them is they still can deliver a premium product, whereas these other LCCs are going premium economy, not true premium. But the counterpoint to that is you got to buy slots somewhere in Europe. Slots in Amsterdam is almost impossible. Getting slots at Charles de Gaulle's, like all the places where they want slots, Heathrow, Gatwick, Amsterdam, like it's hard to impossible. So what are they going to do about that? And can you amortize an expensive slot purchase across just 150 seats as opposed to 200 and still make money?
Right. And the other side of that is how much premium traffic can you really steal with one flight a day?
And so they'd have to do multiple.
Yeah. Right. That's like,
and I bet that there's enough, honestly, one flight a day.
I mean, like, okay, so
EA has a 380 3 days a week plus two other flights. Virgin does double daily to London. There's a significant lift between, and plus the morning flight. There's a decent chunk of capacity.
And Delta has two flights as well, I think.
Out of Boston? Delta had given it. Yeah, they do Amsterdam and Brussels now, but I think they gave London back to BA.
You mean De Gaulle, not Brussels?
No, Delta flies Brussels, Amsterdam. Or Brussels, I thought they flew Brussels, Boston.
I don't think
so. They definitely play Amsterdam, Boston. Maybe not. But anyway, they have a couple, they do have two long hauls. Maybe it's double daily to Amsterdam now. But no, Delta has a couple flights, and they gave the rest back to Virgin, not to, I thought they gave the New York, or the London back to Virgin, though.
It gives back and forth. It's hard to keep track.
Yeah. There's a lot of lift on the nonstops.
So then the other question is London the right place to go, or do you go someplace with a little less competition? Like, there's only one flight to Frankfurt, one flight to Munich.
There's two between Virgin and Delta, and it depends on who's operating them. It seems to depend on, you know, whatever it happens to be. And then there's four, typically, BA flights a day, a morning and three evening. That's a lot of lift. So, you know, can you pull, that's well over 1,000 seats. So adding another 150 doesn't completely destroy the market.
There's three BA flights in the evening now?
Yeah. Has been for a while. A 7 and 8 and a 9:30.
Wow. That's crazy.
Yeah. Huh. Plus the morning flight. But yeah, I do think there's capacity there, and it is the single largest market that JetBlue doesn't serve out of Boston, right? If they look at daily passengers or any other metric, it's the next route in demand. So it's going to happen, but I don't know.
But then the other question is, I mean, is Heathrow the right airport?
I don't think so.
Then what would be?
I would pick Luton or Stansted.
Okay. I would be inclined.
And I know that goes against a lot of what people are suggesting, you know, think is reasonable, because, you know, those are crazy, silly airports that no business person wants to fly to, and you need the connectivity for business people. But JetBlue is very much targeting O&D traffic. They've made that very clear. They don't want onward connections. Well, and
not just that. I would say Stansted is easier to get to the financial district than Heathrow.
Yeah, we talked about this last week. We didn't specifically go to the financial district, but I don't know from Victoria. Is Victoria where you end up, right?
No, you end up in Liverpool. If you could take the Stansted Express, which is like, right. you're already on the east side at that point. You just have to
go. Yeah, and I don't know London geography well enough. You know it way better than me. But you end up on the right train. And then, and like I said, it's a 45-minute express train, so it's a little slower technically than the Heathrow Express, but I was through immigration before I would have been at the counter in Heathrow.
Right.
Unless
they can figure out somehow to do London City, but I don't think a 321 will fit, even with the restricted weight load.
No. The 220, formerly the C series, the Dash 100 series of that could do it, but not the 300.
Okay.
Bombardier at the time did run a test flight and demonstrated a 40-seat config with the right weights for what basically is the current BA1, BA2, A318 service, and proved that it could make it nonstop without the Dublin or the Shannon stop these days. They've already demonstrated that, but that would be, I mean, for JetBlue to show up and have that be its only service would be kind of incredible. That'd be a ballsy move.
It's one way to enter the market.
Yeah, it's a big way to enter the market. I'm also not sure if slots at City are actually available. I don't know how hard that is to deal with.
I imagine that's easier than some of the other airports because you have much smaller carriers there.
Yeah, but it's super restricted. I thought it was super restricted in terms of frequencies because of noise restrictions.
And I don't think you can fly on Saturdays, right?
Between noon Saturday and noon Sunday, it's closed. So there's a couple morning flights, but not many. Anyway, all right, let's talk about something else. United Hawaii, $200 million. Sounds nice, huh?
Westbound Red Eyes. That does not sound nice.
I'm still trying to figure out if he was misquoted or someone misunderstood something. Has there been follow-up from the initial story? Because
it appears to be.
So the quote is basically, yeah, go ahead.
They're apparently going to retime some of the Denver Hawaii flights to leave late in the evening.
Yeah. They want people to be able to sort of, so the one reason it would make sense to me is if you don't want to fly from Denver to all the cities nonstop, but you still want good connectivity, you do westbound red eye and land early morning, and then you hop to your destination island early in the morning. That could make some sense to me, but I just don't get it for dealing with the longer term operation. United, we know, is, I won't say struggling, but is trying to come up with better ways to use the 752s. And right now it's a premium config 757 that's basically flying out to Hawaii that may not support that premium demand.
Well,
and so I wonder if that makes it work.
From Denver, where there really only is one flight to these different cities, from the West Coast, it's mostly 737s at this point.
Sure. Sure. Now I'm only thinking Denver at this point, because that's what we talked about with the westbound red eye. I can't imagine they're going to switch everything to westbound red eyes.
Who knows? Denver is their quote-unquote test market, so I think that's part of the... and I don't think they're going to move all of this stuff, because like San Francisco, LA has multiple flights a day, so maybe one flight a day. But I can't imagine flying like Newark or Dulles to Honolulu and, you know, flying all night.
I could see someone who wants a later departure from Newark being very happy about or from LaGuardia, being happy to take the evening flight to Denver. Mm-hmm. Work all day, take the evening flight to Denver, go to sleep for a few hours and wake up in the islands.
I mean, you can fly an evening flight from here to the West Coast and still get to the islands the same night.
What time's the latest flight out of San Francisco? I don't think it's that late.
I want to say there's like 8 p.m. is there? I think there's an 8 p.m.
Oh, well, that makes it easier.
Yeah.
I don't know. I can sort of get it from that perspective. The other question is, does it become a utilization?
Well, that's what my next question was. Is this a utilization play to be better leveraging your aircraft?
Yeah. Why is this
three?
Yeah, I'm also weirdly not seeing any San Francisco, any United flights in. Oh, that's why, because I have premium economy.
7:30 is the last flight San Francisco to Honolulu. 7:30 p.m.
Yeah, so that means you've got to leave Newark at 2 or 3.
Probably about 3:30.
3:30 will land at 6:30-ish, so that's a tight connection. But yeah, they'll sell it.
Yeah, they'll sell it to you.
And it's depends on the season. The day I'm randomly looking at December, it's a 6:30 departure, not a 7:30. So.
Because that might be because Hawaii doesn't change time zones.
Yeah, daylight saving. But anyway, I sort of get it in that context, not necessarily from the actual West Coast, but from Denver, I can see it working a little bit. That said, you know, remember, Hawaiian's been running Las Vegas, Honolulu, Red Eye forever.
Right.
It's like a 1:30 departure out of Vegas, and it seems to work for them.
But I personally think Vegas is an outlier of a market, and I could be wrong.
In many, many ways.
Outlier market or being wrong or both?
Yeah, outlier market. Also, they retimed it. It's a daytime flight now? No, they have both. They have a 1:45 a.m. that gets in at 6:10, and they also have a 9 a.m. that gets in at 1:30. So,
yeah, because I think they added one when they got their 321s.
Yeah, in December, at least, that you get that. So, and that's also just maybe seasonal, depending on demand. But, yeah, it's. I almost can sort of see it working, but I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah,
It's not going to be your ideal traffic, I think, is what it comes down to.
Yeah, I mean, I think I wonder if this is more utilization and flexibility with aircraft, because clearly overnight they have more aircraft flexibility
than
they do during the day. And then they can deprioritize the Hawaii flights for international flights.
Yes. The question is that I would go with on that is, how do you deal with, I mean, it becomes an aircraft rotation challenge.
Well, yes and no, because now you don't have to overnight an aircraft there.
In
Hawaii. Because right now there's aircraft that overnight from the West Coast. Now what comes in, it turns around, goes back in 2 to 3 hours.
Yeah, that would work. I mean, I don't know. We'll see. It'll be interesting. And I will admit, though, the first time I read it, I thought it was a misinterpretation of some comments.
Yes, and they have the maintenance base there as well, and I don't know if that has anything to do with it.
Sure, that's true. I mean, they did it and used it for, I mean, right, those overnights were used to do certain checks.
Mm-hmm. Or maybe we're completely off, and this is all to be timed with the Island Hopper.
You're pretty upset that Steven's not on to freak out right now, aren't you?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Alrighty, moving on. Delta's finally ready to make some money off its oil refinery by selling off a chunk of it.
Is it really? I don't think that's what's going on. I don't think it's a matter of making money. I think it's a matter of admitting defeat without admitting defeat and reducing their exposure.
Yeah.
And the other thing, which I didn't realize, is in the last year, within a year, they had retuned the refinery. Because when they bought it, they had tuned it to maximize jet fuel production. And in the last year or so, they retuned it to maximize whatever is fetching the most money on the market, which has been fuel. Not jet fuel, but regular fuel. So they clearly are not relying on it nearly as much as they had originally intended to.
Interesting. Yeah, that's... I mean, I don't know. The sort of fluidity with which all these things move through the markets makes me wonder about how, you know, to pick and choose what to make and where and how and why. But I know they said they were going to make their own and that was part of the deal, but I also don't seem to remember them making their own sort of mattering for what the price of having jet fuel was going to be.
Well, their whole intent was that they were expecting somewhere between 30 and 40% of jet fuel production out of that facility to fuel their New York operations. To minimize the cost variation, to have a better control on it. And I don't think that was ever realized.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, it certainly wasn't realized. I mean, they never really got that volume figure out. Wasn't it also like it was on the wrong pipelines? Like there was the wrong side of a river for funneling through the pipeline, so they had to truck it or something? Like there were a lot of weird things.
Yeah, most of the northbound pipelines are on the New Jersey side. So down in that area, there's refiners on both sides, the New Jersey side and the Pennsylvania side. They're on the Pennsylvania side. So the majority of pipelines do come from the Jersey side up towards New York. And the other problem they had was they couldn't get the shale oil in there that they were originally refining for a long time because it just needed to be trained in and couldn't get in. The trains were a problem and they had any number of logistical challenges around that.
Yeah. So anyway, we've obviously, for reasons that actually kind of baffle me, we've been following this closely for way too long. And here we are following it still. I sometimes wonder, like, how do we become obsessed with random topics? But it's a good one. So there's that. And then the last thing I had on my list here today is the House of Representatives in the United States has passed a bill restricting access to pre-check. And they want to restrict it, access to the pre-check lanes to those people, only those people who have Trusted Traveler.
So what about all the people who just paid for pre-check?
No, Trusted Traveler is included in that.
Oh, okay. So what's wrong with that?
So it kills managed inclusion.
Selective inclusion, you mean?
Selective inclusion.
Yep.
We're calling it now. So basically, what's interesting is when my read of it is like the, right now they can do canines or a couple of, or hand swipes and let you in to pre-check even if you don't have the background check done. And this would kill that. And what it would essentially require is that the TSA operate a separate set of lanes that use the canines or the hand swabs or whatever to get expedited screening for those passengers. And then pre-check would just be pre-check. And the argument is that people paid for it. We should give it to them and make sure that they're, you know, getting everything they paid for. And I like that idea, especially someone who's paid for it. But it also means if they do it this way, that means they need a second set of like semi-dedicated lanes. And the problem with pre-check in my mind is not that it's too crowded, is that it's understaffed. And so if you're not going to properly, if you're going to add an extra set of lanes that has, you know, a certain number of people required that don't handle pre-check, you're actually going to decrease the pre-check throughput by doing so.
Well, I think I like the intent behind this, and I actually personally agree with it. What the TSA, I honestly feel the TSA is intentionally slowing pre-check down. I've been to more and more airports where the regular lines are beyond short compared to the expedited and pre-check lines. Like Newark is a great example. I've walked into the pre-check line and it's 200 deep and there's maybe 20 people in the regular line in the evening, which is just insane.
But my problem with that is TSA staffing.
Yep.
Right? At Newark, it's a little better. It's not just a single lane versus, you know, 20. But the problem there is that to me is that they don't dynamically or otherwise allocate resources to pre-check as it should be. And so when you have, you know, my experience where that was so imbalanced was always JFK, JetBlue.
Mm-hmm.
And And actually, it's interesting as there, it would be pretty easy to sort of move things back and forth because they feed from opposite sides and you just move where the middle split is and tell certain agents to not use the to use the walkthrough instead of the nudoscope and you're done, right? Like, that's the big difference. But they would always only have one or two lanes for pre-check through a single walkthrough metal detector and then any number of other.
You know, I personally think there needs to be aptitude test for pre-check if you decide to take your liquids out, or if you decide that you need you don't know how the bin system works, you should just be booted.
Yeah, I also blame the TSA for that. They keep changing. I mean, they've changed the rules enough, and they, if you take the relatively infrequent traveler, who also, by the way, is probably a relatively low threat, so shouldn't have to deal with this idiocy necessarily, and change the rules on them every time they show up. First it was take your liquids out, then it was take your sweater off, then don't take your sweater off, then only certain shoes come off, then every shoe comes off. Like, it, I can understand why those travelers are confused. I'm not excusing that they can't listen and pay attention to what they're being told at the time.
Well, that's my biggest thing, is I've seen people, like the TSA folks, yelling, don't take your liquids out, just put your bag in the bin and go, and people are still futzing with their bag. They're just not listening.
Sure, and that is a problem, and that's societal. But
yeah, but too bad it'll die in the House.
Yeah, so the sort of parting shot on that is the Senate's almost certainly, it has to also get introduced in the Senate and passed there, and it does not even appear to have sponsors in the Senate. So, like many things in the U.S. legislature.
Well, you just have to say it's a national security threat and run right through.
Sadly, I don't think anyone's stupid enough to believe that. Well,
don't be so sure.
I shouldn't say that. Let me come up with a different way to phrase that. I don't think we can convince them. I don't think we can get it loud enough to convince them, because there are a few people in that body that would be stupid. Anyways, I'm going to stop now. Been called a traitor by a senator once. I'm pretty sure I don't need to.
I've never heard that story.
Really?
Yeah.
No, it goes back to the TSA redaction thing.
Oh, okay.
Way back in the day. Do you remember that? When they failed to, when their version of redacting a PDF document was to draw black boxes over the text?
Yep.
So back to removing the text?
Yep.
Yeah, they told me that it was a representative, Congress. But one congressman said that we should ban the tools that quote-unquote hackers were using to uncover this information, which is Adobe Acrobat Reader.
So pretty much every corporate PC in the world needs to be wiped.
She wasn't very smart. And then the other one was a guy who said that by exposing this rather than finding a whistleblower type approach that could keep it secret while still getting it reported was counter to the security of the nation and was an inappropriate way to address the issue and harmed the country, blah, 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 essentially calling me a traitor. It was pretty cool.
These people believe the TSA is probably actually doing stuff to make us safer.
Well, interestingly enough, I think most of them don't because they've seen the red team scores, but all right.
Before we completely go off on a tangent.
Well, I just don't want to rant about the TSA anymore. Anything else?
No, that's all.
Anything exciting? All right. Well, I will see you. Hopefully, for those of you traveling this week, be careful with Florence hitting the southeast. I guess by the time this episode comes out, it'll be really making landfall. So, yay.
I would like to
hopefully I will see you in D.C. on Saturday for our trip to Hong Kong, weather permitting.
And happy fall travel to you, my friend.
Indeed. Indeed. All right.
Okay.
You can follow the podcast at DotsLines on Twitter, moredotsmorelines.com. Leave us comments, ask us questions. We do eventually answer them when they're asked. Just like, we've worked in answering topics that we think we're talking about during the show. It's random and it might actually happen eventually. If you want early access to some of the episodes or you just like us a lot and want to help support our beer fund, feel free to hit us up on Patreon. We like our contributors there and appreciate it. And that's it. Have a great trip.
Sure.